we also talked about the fact that in the Bible we're not talking about a constitutional monarchy like England, where, you know, the king has, or the queen in this case, has power, but it's very, very limited. She's got basically two powers, and she'll be removed from the throne if she really wants to exercise either of them without approval. That doesn't happen in the Bible. That's unheard of. And so then we started looking through Genesis, and we talked about creation and how, one, the exercise of God's power shows us his kingship, so that in creation, God speaks and it happens. And yet, we also see that God gives Adam dominion. And so, in part because Adam is given dominion, and in part because we're told that Adam's created in the image of God, we know that Adam then is supposed to rule over this world, this created order, in some sense, because God does. And because God has given it to him. And so, we talked a little about what this image terminology means, where image is not to mean that Adam physically looks like God, because God's a spirit, but that image technology means that Adam reflects God. So one, he is God's emissary in this world. So God chooses to work through Adam. But even beyond that, Adam is supposed to be reflecting God. And so we see these commands throughout Scripture. You know, so I talked about he reigns, and so in some way we reign. He is called to be holy. He is perfect. And so in the Sermon on the Mount, we're told perfect. And again, that the basis for those commands is because that's what God is. And so we talked about the fall and how we have dominion, or we have that dominion mandate inverted. And so you have, before the fall, you have God who creates man and woman, and they're given dominion over the creation. And yet, now we have the creation that is deceiving the woman, who gives it to the man with no objection, and then the man blames God. And so we have this entire created order flipped on its head, where now we see everything is rebelling against one another and all of the relationships between them are broken. And so now man has to work for his food. The ground doesn't cooperate anymore. Man is in rebellion against God. And that's such a key piece of the rest of the Bible storyline. It is because man is in rebellion against God. And so, and also we see in the curse of the woman in particular, that we have the loss of harmony in marriage. I think this is close to where we left off. The loss of relationship. So the loss of the harmony in marriage. So there's no longer this picture of like the Ephesians 5 marriage. That now is a source of strife, because both parties are striving to lead. I guess the other thing I should mention, and we looked at this in Scripture last time, is that you get this picture of the devil as the king or the god of this world. And so now you have the created order that is in some way under his sway, under his dominion, and yet God is still sovereign. So you get the picture of the beginning of Job, where Satan has to go and ask God for permission to tempt Job. Actually, God suggests it. And so you get that dichotomy then kind of flowing throughout the rest of Scripture. So as we're moving forward here, the next thing I'm going to talk about is this idea of seed and genealogies. But before we dig into that, does anybody have any questions? I just kind of blasted through that real quick. Yes. Sure. I think that's a really good question. There's not a whole lot in Scripture, I think, that touches on that directly. In some sense, I think we get the picture that he is almost as great as he can be before the fall. And in part, that's what tempts him to the fall. And yet, he's not God's equal. And yet, that's what he's striving for. And I don't know that there's necessarily a picture that would lead me to believe that there's necessarily room for him to improve in that, if that makes sense. Anything else? Yep. You would have the ability to change. Yeah. Yeah, and I guess I'm talking more like at his being level. Like, you know, it's not like he can get stronger necessarily. His influence can get stronger. Yes. Yeah. 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 Yeah, it always strikes me. And I'm probably not going to be able to find this right now since I'm trying to find it real quick. Revelation 12 to 14 is always kind of a really interesting passage to me. But one of the points that's made, I believe it's Revelation 12. But woe to you, O earth and sea, for the devil has come down to you in great wrath because he knows that his time is short. And so it's, even from the beginning, he's already lost, and yet he's acting out in rage. His influence maybe is growing, and yet at most it's because the influence is having more and more impact on this world. If that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Sure, absolutely. It's certainly hypothetical, but you know, what is Satan's temptation, or like what causes Satan? What is his motivation in the fall? If it isn't exactly that. So, okay, I guess we'll go ahead and start looking at this concept of seed, which I think is a really important. It's a really important idea in Scripture. So, I guess at first, and we had kind of started just kind of broaching on this, I guess, last time. Would somebody like to read Genesis 1, verses 11 and 12 for me? Sure. Thank you. Yep.
God said, let the earth sprout vegetation, plants, yes. The earth sprout vegetation, plants, 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 plants.
Okay. So the point that I want to make there is that we have. Actually, before I do that, let me just say this. So, in our modern English translations, the Hebrew word that gets translated as seed in some translations gets translated as descendants, gets translated as I'm drawing a blank. There's about a dozen words it gets translated as. But it shows up 100 times through Genesis. It's almost a fourth of the entire occurrences through the Old Testament are in Genesis. And it does that to call our attention to this idea. And so what we see here is that in creation, God creates things to have seed that reproduces true. So the things have seed that reproduces after its own kind. So then we look at Genesis 5, verses 1 through 3. And we get exactly the same kind of idea. Somebody like to read that one for us? Earl, thank you. Yep. Thank you. So, again, we get this idea that Adam fathers a son in his own likeness after his image. So again, we get this idea that Adam's seed then is reproducing true. And yet, we also see that when God created man, he made him in the likeness of God. And so, again, even if you look forward into Luke, you get this genealogy of Christ that runs back and it goes through Abraham and it keeps going back and eventually you get to Son of Adam, Son of God. And so again, we get this idea that seed reproduces true. And it goes all the way back to this idea of being made in the image of God, at least with humans. And so then if we look at Genesis 3:15, we've just gone through the fall. And we have the curse against the man, the curse against the woman, the curse against the man, the curse against the serpent. I might have that backwards. I probably do. Yeah, it's serpent, woman, man. Flipped it. And so Genesis 3:15, I will put enmity between you and the woman, speaking to the serpent, and between your offspring, your seed, and her seed. He shall bruise your head, and you shall bruise his heel. And so now we get this promised seed. So there is some seed. It's much like the English word where it can be plural or it can be singular, which is part of the trick with this passage. We get this promise of a seed that is to come who will crush the head of the serpent. And so when we read through into the next chapter, I was not originally going to do this, but we're going to go through Cain and Abel now. And so as we read into this next chapter, we see that we have the seed of the woman and the seed of the serpent. And so let's go ahead and dig into this. Would somebody like to read Genesis 4, verses 1 to 16? We'll start tying some of this together here. Meredith? Thank you. Okay, so that was a pretty long chunk of scripture. So let's start by summarizing it. So what happens in that story? Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Abel. Mm-hmm. Favor. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you. So we get, at the very beginning, we get two sons, right? So we've just been promised in Genesis 3 that we'll get a seed of the woman and a seed of the serpent. You know, both of those two lineages will continue on. And so now we have two children of Adam and Eve. And so it's a little bit curious, especially as you read on in the story and we start seeing how the two interact, that you get this continuity of the two offspring that are highlighted. And so we look, and actually if we look at other places in Scripture, 1 John 3 comes to mind, we actually see an overt reference to Cain. Let's see here. Actually flip to it. 1 John 3, 8 through 10. Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil, for the devil has been sinning from the beginning. The reason the Son of God appeared was to destroy the works of the devil. No one born of God makes a practice of sinning, for God's seed abides in him, and he cannot keep on sinning, because he has been born of God. By this it is evident who are the children of God and who are the children of the devil. Whoever does not practice righteousness is not of God, nor is the one who does not love his brother. And then if you skip down to verse 12, we should not be like Cain, who was of the evil one and murdered his brother. And why did he murder him? Because his own deeds were evil and his brother's righteous. And so we get this overt idea that Cain is the seed of the serpent. He's the seed of the devil. And so, what does that mean? Does it mean genealogy, like we would think of it today? No, not at all. What's in view here is not his genes. What's in view is his actions. And so, in the 1 John passage, which of course I just flipped off of, 8 through 10... Sorry. 1 John 8 through 10, we get this. Whoever makes a practice of sinning is of the devil because the devil has been sinning from the beginning. So we get this overt connection between the being of the devil and acting like the devil. And, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Similarly, you get this Son of God language being tied to acting like God, in at least the ways that we are created to act like God. So going back to what I was saying earlier, just as a quick aside, we're told to be perfect because God is perfect. But we're never told to be omniscient because God is omniscient. So there are differences between the things, the ways that we can be like God and the ways that we can't. Jim. Yeah. Absolutely. So, when we look at Cain and Abel here, we see that Cain is the seed of the serpent, and that is about his actions. It's his life looks. So he chooses the things of the devil. So if he is the seed of the serpent, then that kind of leaves Abel as the seed of the woman, right? And so we get, again, going back to the promise of Genesis 3:15, right? We have the promise of the seed of the woman who will crush the head of the serpent and the seed of the serpent who will bruise the heel of the seed of the woman. Bit of a tongue twister there. So if with Abel, or sorry, with Cain, if him being the seed of the serpent is about his actions predominantly, or actually with him, it's about his actions in totality. With Abel, this being the seed of the woman, what's in view there is not biological. It is biological, but that's not the point. But what's in view there is the way that he acts. And we see that in the sacrifice. And it's not that Abel brings, or the important bit, I think, is not that Abel brings meat. He brings an animal, whereas Abel or Cain brings vegetables. What's in view is that you'll notice, which verse is that? In the course of time, verse 3, Cain brought to the Lord an offering of the fruit of the ground, and Abel also brought the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. So what's in view is Cain brought some, Abel brought the best. At this point, we don't have it recorded. Yeah, that's one of the great mysteries. Abel did. Abel brought the first of the lambs. Cain brought some vegetables, basically. Yeah, and certainly that could have something to do with it as well. And yet I, yeah. Yeah. Oh boy. Okay, Errol. Sure. Yeah. No. The best. Yeah. I think what's in view kind of goes back to the attitude of Abel versus Cain, where with Abel, it's something that he wants to emphasize. It's something that is the most important, and so he brings the best for the sacrifice, whereas Cain, I guess has some importance to him because he does it, but what's the picture that you get is not that he brings the best. Jim? And I don't want to sidetrack us too far here, but as you actually look forward into the sacrificial system, one of the things that you see is that God makes allowances for people's monetary situations. So if you can't afford a bull, a lamb is acceptable. If you can't afford a lamb, you can sacrifice a dove. And so it's not about the individual sacrifice, it's about the heart that brings it. Yep. And so as we move forward, we see God is able. So then the question becomes, is all hope lost? That should be the question we're asking at that point in the story. So before I kind of get to the end of the story here, we see that Cain kills Abel. God curses Cain. I think one of the things I used to miss a lot is the parallels between Cain's curse and Adam's. And so when Adam is cursed, because you've listened to the voice of your wife, you have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, you shall not eat of it. Cursed is the ground because of you. In pain you shall eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns and thistles it shall bring forth for you, and you shall eat the plants of the field. By the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. And then when Cain slays Abel, Abel's blood cries out to God from the ground, we're told, and God curses him by saying, "And now you are cursed from the ground, which has opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it shall no longer yield to you its strength. You shall be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth." And so that relationship between man and the ground, man and creation that we were talking about earlier, that was broken under Adam, is further broken for Cain. So it's not necessarily even a new curse. It is. But it's an exacerbation. It's a growing of that we see under Cain. And we keep seeing this getting worse and worse and worse, I think, implication here, until you get to Noah, whose name sounds a lot like the Hebrew word for rest. And so one of the passages in Genesis 4 that we're skipping over, I'm just going to kind of briefly highlight this, is, again, we get this idea that seed reproduces true. So Abel, being seed of Adam, seed of the woman, acts in that way. Cain, being seed of the serpent, acts in that way. And so Cain is cursed. He's given a hedge of protection so that he can't have his punishment short-circuited, I guess. Cain has a child. And it goes down through the line, and eventually you get to Lamech. And Lamech, this is verse 23. Lamech says to his wives, "Adah and Zillah, hear my voice, you wives of Lamech, listen to what I say. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. If Cain's revenge is sevenfold, then Lamech's is 77-fold. And so we see, again, this idea of seed. Cain's seed reproduces in the way that Cain is. Except it's getting worse. Where now, for the offense of it, a young man for striking me, gives the impression that this was not justified at all. This was a minor offense that leads to murder. Earl? No. Yeah. Yeah. And then as we're kind of winding down on time here, let's pick up here in verse 25, where we see that, "And Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son, and called his name Seth. For she said, 'God has appointed for me another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain killed him.' To Seth was born, also a son was born, and he called his name Enosh. At that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord." And so, if Abel was the seed of the woman, and now we get this direct connection here between Abel and Seth. I can keep all the names straight in my head here. Now we see that Seth is this line of the promised seed. And that becomes really important, because now in Genesis 5, what we get is a genealogy. And we get two types of genealogies in the book of Genesis. There's a general one and a specific one. Genesis 5 is a great example of this specific one. It's not interested in telling us the entire progeny of the people mentioned. It's focused on a line, a single promised seed. And it runs from Adam to Noah. And eventually we'll get one after the flood that runs from Noah to Abraham. And again, the idea here is that there is a line that we need to be focused on, a line that we need to be following. And we're going to pick up on that point next week. Yep. I'd say so. All righty. Well, if y'all don't mind, let's close out with a word of prayer here and